Hello and welcome to a brand new series of Building Podcasts. It's really good to be back with you. I'm Jamie Harris, Building's Digital Editor. In this mini-series of podcasts, we'll be talking to three experts from across the industry and going behind the hype of some of the buzzwords in the built environment everyone is getting excited about. We've heard these phrases countless times, but where did they come from and what do they mean for construction in reality? In this episode, we're discussing the rise of flexible workspaces and phrases such as co-working, flexible working, and collaborative shared spaces. Speaking with me in Building's own co-working space in Shoreditch is JLL's Elaine Russell. Okay, so joining me is Elaine Russell, who's Head of UK Offices Research and Strategy at JLL, and also Chair of the British Council for Offices Research Committee. The committee has recently commissioned a report called The Rise of the Flexible Workspace in the Corporate Sector. Elaine, thanks for joining me today.
Pleasure to be here.
So listeners might have picked up, obviously, that this episode is all about flexible working. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the report is titled The Rise of Flexible mm-hmm. Working. Could you just give us a sort of in a nutshell how it's risen, where it's come from, where we are today?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, flexible workplaces have been around for quite some time. If you think back to the 1980s, we had Regus. They're kind of the first kind of provider of spaces. But actually, the sector has evolved quite a lot since then, on the back of particularly the GFC in 2009, the rise of freelancers, the self-employed, creating a very different way of people wanting to work. But actually not wanting to work at home or in the coffee shop, wanted to work together to collaborate. And that's when we started to see the rise of co-working spaces. Okay. And they were creating a very different working environment where people wanted to work. And that's really kind of driven the growth. So it's really about how we work, where we work. And obviously one of the factors that's helped that growth is technology, which has been an enabler to allow us to work from many, many different places.
Mm. Yeah, of course. I mean, even in the last probably 5 years, you could say a lot of technology's come in and changed how we work, say, to the start of this decade.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And if you look at, JLL, I've done some research that shows that most people, like half of people work in a different office from their main company as office. Half of people work in coffee shops or hotels, for example. A third of people generally work on trains, and a third of people work in co-working spaces at least once a month. So people are working in all sorts of different places, and that change has really, really accelerated, as you say, over the last 5 years or so.
What have you noticed, the sort of the key changes in demand for office space?
So I think the key changes are very much as they're driven by this fact we just talked about, the fact that we've got different people working in the workspace today. So the classic millennials or Generation Z or whatever, the younger people in the offices, they want something different from their workplaces too. And companies are having to fight for that talent. We're in a period of very low unemployment. That one of the key drivers for corporates really is that war for talent and attraction and retention of talent. So what they're looking for is workplaces that where people really want to work. So what you're seeing is some kind of really space common elements in terms of breakout areas, collaboration spaces, areas that enable or spaces, I suppose, that enable companies to adopt that kind of activity-based agile working that gives them flexibility in how and where their businesses work.
Okay.
You're seeing it in the co-working spaces, but it's those trends are transcended into the kind of traditional space as well, and I think that's a really key point to make. It's generally a reflection of just the general way that we are working is changing over time.
That's quite an interesting point, actually, you bring up about the co-working spaces as sort of almost as trendsetters. I mean, we're sat here right now in a co-working space, and you can sort of kind of, I mean, I work in this co-working space, you can kind of feel that that buzz, that energy, sort of energy and you know, different ideas sort of coming together from you know, different startups as well, for example. But you're saying that's transcended now into sort of corporate office environment?
Yeah, I mean, you're seeing, you know, some of the bigger corporates providing their own kind of collaboration space, shared working spaces within their own offices. They're actually taking spaces in co-working spaces as well to kind of create that, energise space. Yeah,
that's an interesting.
So using it, and I think that the report from Gensler shows that quite clearly in terms of the kind of models that corporates are using. So a lot of them will have membership models so people can go and touch down and use that collaboration space. Mm. They're also using kind of co-working spaces for projects so that they can go in and those teams are working in a very different environment perhaps to their corporate office. So again, it helps to create, I suppose, re-energise those teams, provide a different working environment to hopefully kind of spark different ideas than perhaps working in a perhaps more traditional type of office space. So that's why I say it's transcending. And then some of the corporates are, you know, particularly at the bigger end of the spectrum, are putting in their own kind of flexible kind of spaces within their own buildings, again, to encourage people to move away from their desks to kind of collaborate with people from different teams within their existing office space as well.
What's quite interesting, I mean, we reference the corporate office space. Mm-hmm. Is this across, you know, loads of different sort of professions, or is it sort of, I mean, we can sort of put it in the, you know, the media or the certain type of workplaces, but is it perhaps going into the more traditional ones?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, you know, you go back, say, 5 years, where we started perhaps this conversation about what led to the growth of flexible working and the changing ways that we do work. Now, a lot of that was driven by particularly the tech sector. They wanted a very different way of working. And because they were looking to attract a different type of worker, they created these different working environments. Now, that those changes have filtered all the way through to many, many different sectors. So, because they're partly because they're also trying to attract and train the same staff these days. But you have, you know, you've got legal companies using flex space, professional services. I know legal and professional run on the same. But even, you know, financial services, you know, so a good example is someone like HSBC. I think they were one of the companies that were interviewed in the report. They have taken, I think it's about 1,000 desks down at WeWork on the South Bank. So they are really at the forefront of using flexible workspaces to enhance their corporate footprint, I suppose. They're a very good example. And part of the reason is, you know, because, again, they're using it to create different environments for different teams. And particularly just thinking about the banking and financial services sector, a lot of those banks are moving into like digitalization of their products. So they're looking to attract kind of the digital natives or whatever you want to call them, which are the same people that have been working in technology. So that's why, again, that's accelerating that change of how they're working within their own corporate space.
So taking a step back, have you noticed a change in essentially what developers are looking for when they're looking at a building, when they're designing? Obviously, there's a drive and competition for tenants as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things that you're seeing at the moment, we are in a very low supply environment generally. So actually what is driving what developers want is really the corporates, because they are finding it much more difficult to find space in today's market. So it's actually probably the other way around where we are today. But I think what developers are doing is they are looking to provide spaces, obviously, where the tenants of today and tomorrow will want to locate to. And what they're trying to do is, again, is create an environment where those occupiers will want to come and lease space. So you're looking very much at things like providing that amenity space, providing flexibility in use. Now, trends that we are seeing is a lot of corporates wanting to build that flexibility into the way they take space. So actually what they're looking at is they're looking at the landlord to provide a certain level of flexibility within that building, whether that is through the landlord providing their own kind of flexible co-working spaces, leasing part of that space to a co-working provider. And some corporates now are even kind of demanding, when they say we want to take some space in your building, but we expect you to have leased one floor to a flexible provider. So I think that's one way that the landlords are having to deal with this kind of change in the way that occupiers are looking at accommodating and occupying their space.
Yeah. I never realised how low the supply was at the moment of the workspace that people want. You know, you see these massive buildings going up. You know, you just look down the road from us and see 22 Bishopsgate and think, that's got a massive floor plate.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of those cranes obviously relate to residential.
Yeah, of course.
I think if you look at the development pipeline, what is under construction in central London, but also in a lot of the regional cities, is a lot of that space has been pre-let by tenants. So they've taken the space before completion. So even though you see obviously a lot of cranes going up, the actual volume of speculative space is actually quite low. So from a central London perspective, for example, half of the space that is now under construction has already been pre-let to a tenant,
wow.
Which is relatively high compared to where we've been in previous cycles.
Mm. So you mentioned central London, and also you mentioned other regional markets as well. How have you seen those markets differ? Are we seeing a different picture in other cities such as Manchester or Birmingham? Or
we're not necessarily seeing a different picture. I think the regional cities lag behind London, perhaps in their level of growth and their evolution in terms of the growth of flexible workplaces. I think you have to remember that London is the biggest centre around the world in terms of its flexible footprint.
Mm.
JLL estimate, I think, it's about 16.1 million square feet of flexible space across the capital.
Okay.
Still relatively small scale, it's about 7% of the total stock, but actually it's probably got one of the highest penetration rates across Europe and across the globe. So London is relatively mature in that sense, and you know, there's about over 150 different operators in central London. And of course, growth has been coming. We can't have a conversation about flex space, I suppose, without touching on WeWork.
Yeah, of course.
WeWork came into the market in 2014 and have driven a lot of that growth. They haven't driven all that growth. There's been a lot of other operators in the market who've been growing perhaps at a steadier rate. But that was really one of those instrumental, that turning point was when WeWork kind of came into central London. So the regional markets are very much more, I suppose, characterised by kind of the more tertiary serviced offices rather than the kind of more co-working-y hybrid space that we have in central London. But the activity in those markets has probably taken off, I'd say, over the last 3 years. And we've started to see the sector of the cities grow, particularly Manchester and Birmingham. They've probably taken a little bit of a lead in terms of growth compared to, say, the other markets. But that growth, say again, is in those regional cities, is not just because of WeWork. Somewhere like Bristol, for example, I think three of the largest five transactions seen so far this year have been from co-working providers.
Really?
Obviously, one of them was a WeWork. So they are definitely moving and seeing growth. And actually, the flex sector as a whole. So in central London, so for example, this year, the flex sector has accounted for over a quarter of leasing transactions. In the regional cities, it's about 17-18%. So it's a significant volume of activity we are seeing in those markets.
Okay. And on a sort of more international level as well, I know that we're looking at the UK sort of market here, but is this a trend that we're seeing elsewhere across the world, or how are sort of things moving in the flex sector?
Yep, absolutely. Globally? I mean, I think co-working has been a rising global trend for several years. Very much, the co-working element of it all kind of was really driven out of the United States.
Mm.
But that, again, like we just talked about from the UK, has just transcended most markets. You're seeing growth coming through in Asia, Australia, Europe, North America particularly. So the UK, particularly with London is the biggest market, Germany followed by New York. But you are seeing stronger levels of rates of growth in a lot of those kind of Asian markets as well. I think in the report mentioned that I think Asia has about 12,000 centres generally, and the UK has just under 6,000. So, smaller scale, but it's growing quite rapidly.
Okay, and that's across all of Asia,
yeah,
so you can see where the... Yeah, okay,
yeah,
so it's still growing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ah, okay.
I'd say London is... kind of cements itself as the kind of global leader.
Yeah.
And a co-working space opens every 5 days in London compared to, say...
Every five days.
In comparison, say, every 7.5 days in New York. So, London really is at the forefront of a lot of that, the trends that have been set in the sector.
I mean, this can't be just new builds if it's every 5 days. So are we looking at sort of different types of environments that have been retrofitted to...
Yeah, I think...
to obviously meet that demand, because you said there's such a demand.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think you are seeing... co-working spaces, when they probably first started evolving, by their very nature, probably were more in refurbished, retrofitted spaces, slightly more grittier environments, if you kind of think about who they were targeted at the very beginning.
Yeah.
So kind of the self-employed freelancers, generally kind of lower cost space. And over time, it's probably... we've moved up the value curve with the operator looking at taking bigger and bigger spaces. And so to get bigger spaces, you need to take new build. So that's probably a trend that we've seen. It's kind of probably moved the other way from refurbs to new space over that period of time. And one of the other things you're seeing is very much is that the operators are say they're taking bigger and bigger units. We would never have seen a flexible provider take a pre-let, but we start to see that because, again, to kind of drive that growth in their footprint, and because of the lack of supply we talked about before, they've been looking at bigger and bigger buildings. And part of the reason for that is because they want to accommodate the corporate occupier, which is what we were talking about at the beginning, because the corporates obviously are looking at growing and using flex space to a greater extent. Also, it makes sense for the operator themselves because it provides a greater certainty in terms of the kind of income they get for that space, and a greater resilience in terms of the demand. So the bigger corporates are likely to take slightly longer terms in their spaces. So you start to see a shift in perhaps how flexible workplace providers are looking at who is going into their spaces. So we work with our enterprise solutions, very much targeting those kind of bigger corporates. But there are other examples as well. All the most flexible workplace providers are looking at how they can attract those bigger companies into their spaces. So, and as I say, in order to be able to do that, they're taking bigger units as well. Mm. One of the other things I say about taking bigger units as well is going back to this providing the collaboration space, the community spaces as well, in conjunction with those kind of private offices that the bigger corporates might take. So again, it just creates that bigger scale generally. A flex operator, they would typically put around 20% of their space would be to a collaboration and co-working spaces in their centres.
Oh, that's interesting. So have you noticed that growing, or?
I think it's kind of just seems to be a very rough rule of thumb across the market. I think it probably has grown over time, but it seems to be 20-25% in terms of the space that they allocate. Seems to be that, because of that kind of rule of thumb.
Does that then have an impact? So obviously we've talked about some of the sort of maybe retrofit, but also there are, you know, obviously several new builds which are looking at the flexible workspace. Does that have an impact on how those floor plates are designed, essentially? Because or are they just designed with flexibility in mind?
I think the flexibility is the key point. I think most developers will be looking to provide a building that appeals to a wide range of occupiers, whether that's a flexible co-working provider or a traditional tenant. Right. So then there are obviously lots of factors that might influence the design. If you are specifically looking for kind of a flexible workplace provider, but landlords, I suppose, you know, typically will provide a building that appeals across a wider range of sectors.
Mm. So of course, a lot of corporates are using flexible workspace for different working environments, mm-hmm. provide collaborative spaces, but that's not the only reason, is it? I mean, there are clearly other reasons why people would use these types of spaces.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're seeing some companies using it for what we call swing space. If, for example, a company was fitting out their building, perhaps looking at a floor-by-floor refurb, they might move a team out of one floor into co-working space while they refurbish that, and then generally move their people around their own space in conjunction with that flexible space as well. I think another way that we're seeing corporates use flexible space is just in their whole real estate strategy, really. We're seeing increasing number of corporates now kind of using what we call the core and flex model. Mm. So they're reducing the amount of space they perhaps take on a traditional lease, and then using flex spaces. I suppose what would have in previous cycles been that option space. So it provides them with that flexibility to grow and contract much more quickly. Because obviously, of course, to go into a flexible workplace or co-working space is very quick and very easy. So it provides them also with speed and agility to meet the needs of a growing or contracting business, which, of course, when you've had to tie in yourself into a long-term lease, companies haven't been able to do that. So it's providing companies with greater flexibility. And I think that's really the key point. It's that corporates are really looking for flexibility across their whole real estate portfolio.
And of course, that probably, I'm just guessing here, but that probably has come in because the demand for this type of space, or just workspace generally, the demand is so high. You mentioned earlier that supply is really limited. So they have to change their strategies because they need to save costs somewhere.
They're changing their strategies. I think they're also looking at using flexible space that they're really focusing on their core business and leaving the real estate part to somebody else.
Okay.
And again, it's coming back to this point I made earlier in the conversation about it's all about that war for talent. It's all about attraction and retention of talent as well. Companies are having to adapt their kind of real estate to meet those needs, and using flexible workspaces is just one way of doing that.
Of course, we've talked about all the different ways in which companies are now using flexible space to, you know, their own advantage, whether that's through different collaborative spaces or whether that's, you know, their real estate strategy. The BCA report actually has several case studies of different companies and how they're using it. Are there any which you particularly find interesting, the way that they're working?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, one of the models that's identified in the report is companies actually setting up their own flexible spaces within their own kind of corporate footprint. Mm. And GSK is a really good example of that. They are undertaking a pilot in their space in Brentford so they're creating their own kind of collaborative space in that particular space. And they're really looking at how that has an impact on team behaviours, how it has an impact on team performance, and also how does it have an impact on well-being. So they're kind of piloting that space, and I think the results, which are, say, as you say, are in the report, generally show that people who are working in that more collaborative co-working spaces are generally feel they have they're much more energized in their work, and they feel they have a much better work-life balance, for example. So that's a really great example of companies using that flexibility within their own environments.
So you've mentioned the flex sector quite a few times. Why is it called that?
Well, I think co-working is obviously the buzzword that everyone talks about, and it conjures up a particular kind of, I suppose, image of what we're talking about. But actually, flex space is so much more than that. And it reflects the fact that the products on offer vary quite considerably. So you've got your very, I suppose, your more traditional serviced offices. Mm-hmm. You have your co-working spaces. And then you have a lot of the operators in the market today kind of provide a combination of both, which we tend to typically call the hybrid space. But at the same time, we're also seeing a lot of new models, new companies coming in with different models. So you've got a lot of the landlord models, so the likes of British London Story, Landsec and Mayo. But also a number of operators such as Knotel and Convene, who've arrived probably over the last 12, 18 months from the United States, who are providing, I suppose, more of a service towards the kind of bigger companies. So they typically will be looking at, they're kind of more like a managed solution, a kind of a wraparound service. So they're kind of, they take the space from the landlord, but they let it out to just one occupier. So they provide, it's kind of more of a managed solution.
Oh, wow, okay. Yeah, very different
model. And I think one of those things, that it also reflects the fact that the flex space or the flex sector is evolving over time. Mm. So, you know, so we talked about the fact it's been around for more than 30 years, but you look at actually how it's evolved over that period of time, and the product that is actually being offered, and the way that the level of services have changed over that period of time as well. So I think flexible workplaces kind of encompasses a much wider range of possibilities.
Mm. Okay, that's really interesting. You mentioned that it's changing over time, and the flex space does change over time. Let's look ahead. What do you expect to see maybe over the next couple of years? It's probably much more difficult to look much further ahead than maybe 2 years.
Yeah,
even 2 years might be difficult. I don't know.
No, absolutely. Well, I think the flex space market is here to stay. I think it's very much part and parcel of the real estate market. So I think it's actually quite an exciting time just for the general evolution of office and workspaces generally. I think what we'll probably see is that a lot of the growth will come in those regional markets. As I said, they've been lagging behind, but they offer great opportunities. And I think what you will see is that corporates will really kind of just embrace that flexibility and will just use flexible workplaces as part of their real estate strategy. And I think flexible workplace providers or centres will just become one way that corporates can incorporate flexibility into their whole portfolio. And I think that's the key for where the future is really. It's flexibility and it's agility in terms of how businesses use their space.
The BCO report, the rise of the flexible workspace in the corporate sector, and that's available to BCO members at the moment, I'm right in saying?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Brilliant. Elaine Russell, thank you very much for joining me.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, that's it for this Building podcast. As ever, please do let us know your thoughts and feedback on these podcasts by leaving a rating and review on iTunes or by emailing building@building.co.uk. We really do appreciate all of your feedback. You can listen back to all of the episodes of this Building podcast series, as well as our archive of podcast episodes by going to building.co.uk/podcasts or by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. And on the next episode, we'll be talking to Igloo's Chris Brown about social value. Until next time.